This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi and welcome to a slightly inebriated episode 569 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com and joining me via Skype once again from Melbourne, Victoria, it is Mr. Glyn Lavender from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au. It has been like 5 weeks.
I'm not a drinker.
What?
I'm not a drinker, so I think we know which end just by that introduction. It's been like 5 weeks! I think we can tell who's the inebriated one. Oh, Lord, our dogs have been mates, been forever!
It's been 5 weeks since we recorded.
Has it been 5 weeks?
I think it has.
How?
I don't know. It just has.
Jeepers.
Because
we'll be dead before we know it. This time keeps flying like this. It'll be the year 2079 before we know it.
Because I remember thinking that it was like 3 weeks the week before I went to Darwin, and I was thinking, oh, I really should have recorded before we went to Darwin. But then the week got away from me, and then the week after I got back, you weren't available. So it was like, there's another week gone.
So, oh, Jesus. Jesus.
How you been?
Well, I was going to tell you a little something-something before we went to air, a little something-something, a little private, a little something probably shouldn't say on podcast, probably not appropriate content, Bruce, but we didn't tell you.
We'll do it anyway.
And it's still concerning me somewhat. And I thought maybe people could use a bit of a laugh anyway and could get – so as part of my ongoing medical care, I'm on – some fairly serious blood thinners.
Oh, right, okay.
So when I bleed, I don't seem to stop for a long, long time. It bleeds. See, the little cut is a pain in the ass. It's a 15-minute job to get stop bleeding.
Yep, got it.
And when you maybe knock something that bleeds a bit, like the old canoggin, the old head, because, heads bleed a lot.
Yep.
So if you ever cut your head, it's just really bad. It takes an hour of luck to stop. Well, I don't even know how to even approach this, Bruce. I had a bit of a health shock.
Yeah.
I was on the old toilet, as they call it in France.
Right.
The toilet. And I got up from said appliance.
Yeah.
And I looked down to a bowl full of blood.
Oh, yoy, yoy.
I mean, a lot of blood.
Oh, yoy, yoy.
You know, blood and water, doesn't it? A lot of blood. And I'm going, what the hell, And I look all around myself, and I don't see no blood coming from anywhere.
Right.
I'm looking high, I'm looking low, I'm looking in the mirror, I'm looking everywhere. And then I look at my hands, and my hands are covered in blood.
Right.
And I go, I don't know what's happened, And I'm feeling blood dripping on my leg, like a fair bit of it.
What?
And I look down, and I can't see where it's coming from. But it's starting to pool on the floor. But
this is starting to sound like the scene from There's Something About Mary.
It's not as pleasant as that. Well, it was kind of the same because when I've gone to go and have a bit of a sit down, as a gentleman from time to time, get a little bit of an itch on the old, let's call it the scrote, shall we say? And I've got fairly sharp nails at the moment, Bruce. I've given the old scrote a bit of a, possibly a bit more of a brisk scratch older than I expected, and thought nothing more of it. I've taken the tiniest little nick into the old scrote. Now, it turns out your scrote bleeds more than the head. And it's taken me a good part of the last hour. Stop the damn flow. And I'm currently sitting on a pile of OT towels just in case she comes to life again, shall we?
In case Old Faithful erupts again.
Exactly. If I start looking a little pale or the level of skin color starts going down my forehead, it's draining out, Bruce. My goodness, it scared the crap out of me because I had no idea where it was coming from. I go, oh, geez, let's get out. See, if there's blood in your urine, you're in a bit of trouble. And I'm going, oh, no, that's a lot of blood. So, anyway, so probably a little too much information for some of our listeners.
Quite possibly.
But it was kind of a laugh. Yeah, we got to laugh at our own misfortunes, and why shouldn't other people laugh at me as well?
That's it. So other than profuse bleeding, how's the last 5 weeks been?
Well, a lot of it's been sort of planning, getting ready for the BFOP, the old Bright Festival O Photography.
Yes.
Which was just on the last weekend, just gone.
Nice.
It runs Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
Right.
So I've been preparing for that. I had to finish off my presentation. Well, I did my presentation for the lovely folk at the Horsham Camera Club.
Yeah.
There's a few things I needed to fix. It didn't go quite as smooth as I would like.
Right.
And over 300 pages, that's, you know, can happen. But that was my only run through, and I've got up to Bright, and it's time for. And I'm the first speaker of the whole event, so they do the grand opening, and then they introduce the big G.
Right.
And I realise I haven't fixed the presentation.
Oh no!
So 20 minutes out from starting. Yeah, time away. I'm trying to remember, and it had been like 3 or 4 weeks. I'm trying to remember what it was I needed to fix.
Yeah.
So that was, yeah, preparedness is so when I say I've been preparing for BFOP the last few weeks, obviously not. I had a meetup with my Melbourne folk who are coming to India with me Saturday.
Oh, nice.
Week ago.
Nice.
First time I've done this with the tour group, getting together, answering questions, talking about settings, talking about just trying to get people's head around some of the logistics.
Yep.
I had five from coming from Melbourne, so five showed up, and met one of them for the first time, and that was the husband. There's a husband and wife team, and the husband's coming. And I found out a day or two prior to that, because when I've asked people to tell me what kind of gear they were bringing, because I want to, on the day, bring my flash triggers down.
Yep.
And make sure everyone's camera can trigger the flash. Save me trying to do that while somebody overseas.
Yep. Let me guess. Somebody said, I'm bringing an iPhone 16.
No, worse.
15.
No, I've got an 11. So yeah. No, someone said, oh, we're just sharing one camera between the two of us. Now, Ben and Elizabeth, if you happen to listen to this podcast, Bruce is drunk. He's not laughing at you. He's laughing with you. Or he's laughing with me at you. One of the two. And I'm trying to think, well, how does that work?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, oh, honey, hurry up and stop because I want to have a go. And then, no, honey, give it. And by the end, they're asking for separate rooms.
Yeah.
can we bunk in with
or
you?
Or separate then? Flights home.
Yeah. I made the magnanimous and fabulously generous offer of supplying one of my cameras and a couple of lenses for them to take.
Nice.
And the whole point of this get together and the whole point of me loaning them a camera and lenses is not to be a nice guy. It's just to make my life easier.
Absolutely. And to make your customers feel like they got something out of the trip, because I think at the end of the day...
Well, I have to get something out of the trip. Huh?
I think at the end of the day, those pair would have got home and been slightly disappointed at the decision to go with only one camera.
Which would have been their own fault. It could be blamed on said tour leader.
Absolutely.
He's so generous, so I managed to squeeze some hotel beers out of them. Yeah, as for loan costs, because they don't realise that the hotel beer is like $10 a beer. I offered four, they said eight. So I didn't tell them the price. Bit of a shock. So I think I'm sorted for alcohol for the trip, not a massive drinker. Yeah. But we've got even together, and I'm looking at the five folk. I know the other two that are coming with me, they're a husband and wife team from Perth. They came to my last tour, so I know them pretty well.
Right.
And I don't know these five. I mean, I know them a little bit from meeting them a couple of times at camera clubs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I'm looking for the one, Bruce.
The one?
You know, the one.
Neo?
There's one on every tour, Bruce.
Oh, okay.
There's one.
Right.
There's a one. There's one every workshop.
Not a Neo, then.
There's one at every event. There's a one.
Right.
And I'm looking at it and I'm going, well, it's not her. She's lovely. Well, it's not her. She's quite lovely. Well, it's not her. She's a bit quiet, but she's lovely. Well, it's not her. She's kind of vibrant and happy, and the husband seems like a decent bloke, and he's a cop, so he should be able to handle a bit of pressure. And then I'm thinking, well, the couple in Perth are nice. Well, if it's none of them, it must be me, Bruce.
You're the one.
It's got to be me. I'm find the one. You know, it's like when you go play poker and you can't see who the bunny is, it's you. Oh, my goodness. That's the same case for India. I'm going to be the pain in the ass. So that was kind of fun. I popped out to the lovely folk at Blonde Robot and picked up my new lighting gear for India too.
Nice.
So it's I put on the link. Have a little click on this link for me, the Harlow.com product. So in between being offered an ambassadorship and me getting the gear, they changed the company name, which is – so what was Hobo Light, they're now – well, the product's still called it, but they're actually called Harlow,
right,
which makes as much sense as Hobo Light. But I was wondering, if you click on the link, and you'll see at the top there's like there's little pretty colour filters and stuff.
Yeah.
And to the left there's a handle.
Right.
Well, the handle's the battery.
Oh, nice.
How cool is that? So you hold this handle.
Yep.
And then your light's a little thing down the bottom corner down there. Just click on there. Then you've got little focusing Fresnel lenses. You've got
And I've got to say, gels. The body of the light, the styling, the ergonomics of it are kind of reminiscent of a box brownie, I was going to say.
Or a Hasselblad. I would go more Hasselblad. Yeah. That's
Hasselblad. Yep, yep.
Yeah, my history. Yep. But I think they're cute as all get out.
Yeah, you know? Totally.
So I hadn't used one. So I used one of these up in Bright for my workshop's called again. That's right. Great photos in locations and great photos in locations, but at night. And in the but at night ones, we used these and they were awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah, playing with colored gels, playing with all sorts of fun stuff. So it was really good. But I got to tell you, doing workshops at night for 20 people is kind of tough. It's a fair pressure. So on my second nighttime one, towards the end, I turned to Alex from Blonde Robot / Tamron and Harlow and among other things. I said, I've got a great idea for next year's Bright Festival of Photography, a whole new concept in workshops. He goes, what's that? I said, great portraits in locations, but in the afternoon. Before dark or something like that. It's like, because those nighttime ones are killer. Absolutely killer. So we had a fabulous time up there on the weekend. There's about 600 photographers. So every year the event just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I think there's 600 or 650 photographers up there.
Wow.
40 or 45 instructors.
Wow.
But what I thought I'd go through, just because there's literally, it doesn't matter what you're into or wanting to get into photography, there's something there for you.
Yeah.
This is the great thing about having so much variety of structure. So I just thought I'd just run through just a small sampling of the type of workshops that are on there for anyone who's thinking about, you know, like getting Bruce down here.
Yeah.
And might I add, we had 5 listeners of Shutters Inc. up there.
Wow.
Well, 5 that I knew. 5 that when I was doing my talk, they put their hands up and said, I'm number 5. Unfortunately, they all said I'm number 5 at the same time. But we had 5 listeners, Bruce. That's like,
that's awesome.
We almost had a quorum and we were going to kick you off, but then we realised you did all the work, so we thought we'd better not. But so here's just an example of the workshop. So there's a printing workshop, so to learn how to print, which is pretty good. Drone workshop.
Nice. Good.
There were fire twirlers, so you could learn how to do movement stuff at night.
Yep.
There was a 10-hour bus trip on each day, so you could get on a bus with other photographers and drive over the mountains, shooting landscapes all the way to sunset, which is pretty amazing. There was sports workshops with cricketers and things like learning how to do sports.
Yep.
There were wildlife. There was one which I thought was kind of a cool idea, a dog photo walk. And you go on a photo walk and they take the dog and they show you how to set your dog, find cool locations to pose your dog as you go for a walk. So you can do the kind of cool Instagram-y type shots of your dog. I thought that's pretty cute. Yeah.
Love it.
Then there was dogs in water workshop, which is pretty cool.
Okay.
And I mean, just throwing a ball and learning how to capture that movement and life and all that kind of stuff. There was just a workshop that focused just on water, like going up the mountains, learning how to control, you know, waterfalls and flow and all that sort of stuff in your shots. Pretty good. This is a good one. There's something called glow flow portraits. And it was people with glow sticks and body movement, creating all these incredible patterns.
Wow.
So it's like light painting, but with and portraiture or body shaping at the same time.
Yep.
It was kind of cool. There's cosplay shoots.
Yeah.
They brought up a car that's not a Formula One car, but but close. Okay. And light painted that, doing light painting of these cars and this oval. And while they were doing it, massive aurora over the top. So the light paint, they got these cars on this oval, light painted with an aurora. The aurora was going off all weekend. Yeah. People catching amazing shots. You know? Yeah. That was that. They had to pay extra for that, of course.
Yeah.
There was a rope bondage portrait session.
Nice.
Where they just tied a woman to the and dangled her from the roof, basically.
Yep.
This thing called shibari, a Japanese form of bondage.
Yep.
There was BMX. They learned how to do like that kind of sports stuff. There was multiple food workshops, there's macro workshops, editorial portraits to know how to do people in locations, which is kind of cool. Black and white only landscape workshop, which I thought was kind of cool. And that was done like in the middle of the day to show how you can use that really hard contrasty light.
Yeah.
Kind of cool. Storytelling portraits, illuminated horses where they're doing lighting and coloured smoke and horses and stuff.
Oh, wow.
Pretty cool. Light painting, of course. Intentional camera movement workshops. Street photography workshops. Adventure weddings. They're taking people up into the mountains or on the edges of cliffs and doing learning how to do some of those more dramatic wedding shots.
Yeah.
Kind of cool. Working with liquid, like dropping ice cubes into wine, in glass of wine.
Yep.
Capturing
yep.
all that movement and stuff. Retro film workshops, going out shooting film. There was one run by the fabulous Vicky Bell, where she had some, I don't know the details, but she had some major personal trauma about a year ago and suffered major PTSD and lost all her photo mojo. And she did a talk, and I didn't see it, I was working, but did a talk on how she got her way back from losing all hope in doing anything to getting her photo mojo back again.
Wow.
And then she was doing a workshop on rediscovering your photo mojo,
nice.
Be it from whatever reason you've lost it, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
There was environmental portraits in a gold mine.
Wow.
And environmental portraits in a stained glass maker's building where the guy makes stained glass windows.
Wow.
And so they're photographing the worker. And there's just multiple portrait workshops, multiple landscape workshops, posing workshops, photographing cyclists. There's just so much stuff. So I think it doesn't matter what kind of photography you've always maybe wanted to give a bit of a go. There's two or three things there you could go out and try in one weekend. And find out how you, with experts, and find out how much you enjoy them, you know?
Yeah, right.
And the workshops go from like an hour and a half to 10 hours.
Crazy.
What an incredible logistical event to put together, you know?
Yeah.
So
phenomenal.
And the camaraderie here's an example for people who may be a bit reticent to come if they don't know other people into photography. One person put on there's a Bright Festival of Photography groupies page on Facebook said, look, I'm going up by myself. I don't know anybody at all, but I've reserved a table at the brewery on the Thursday night, the night before. If any other single travellers who don't know many people want to come and just hang out, love to see you. And I saw a photo. There's like 25 or 30 people there.
That is so cool.
All just building new friendships and relationships and stuff.
That's awesome.
And there's stuff like that across the entire weekend.
Yeah, that's great.
Last year I met this lovely lady who'd been a regular and I knew she was ill and she died not long after it. But she'd been such a staple of going up there that they'd got an award named after her that they presented on the weekend to people who show a certain trait. And they filmed it, and the woman's best friend, who's a mad photographer too, she sent that video back to her family in Scotland, this woman's family in Scotland, and everyone bawling, just so amazed at the respect and the care that a bunch of strangers showed for this woman. So it's that kind of vibe across the whole thing, which is pretty darn cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's only one disappointing aspect, well, two. I took me fly rods, didn't catch any fish. Major disappointment. It was bloody hot up there. It was like 27 degrees every day. We're up in the mountains, so we're closer to the sun, so it's even hotter, Bruce. My wife had to go to Brisbane yesterday morning at like 7 o'clock, so I couldn't stay up for the big after party. I had to come home so I could take the kids to school. I missed out. That's when all the instructors get to hang out.
Oh.
It's probably the best time of the whole weekend where you get to talk to like-minded people.
Yeah.
So that was a bit disappointing, but what you going to do?
Yeah.
So that's been my 5 weeks, mate. What about yourself after all that?
Mate, absolutely
nothing.
Gutted and annoyed with myself.
Why?
For not...
Is that why you're drunk?
For not...
You're drowning your sorrows.
Yeah, maybe. For not staying up on Friday night...
After the Aurora.
For the Aurora. I woke up at 2:30, walked outside...
Better see a dentist then.
Yeah, exactly. Walked outside, nothing happening, went back to bed. Woke up half hour later at 3 o'clock, thought, I'll give it another look. Walked back outside, nothing happening. Went back to bed, slept through, and, of course, it went off at 4:30.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's just, it's one of those things, I think, that, you know, if you really want to see the Aurora, then you have to make the commitment that you are going to stay up right through the early hours.
Yeah. It's, even if nothing's happening.
Because it can come and go in such a short period of time. Like, it could be a 20-minute event.
Yeah.
And if you're sleeping through that half hour, then you've missed it, you know? And
yep.
I'm really...
Or you might get a tiny bit of glow, but you've missed all the magic stuff there.
Yeah, you know, and like after, you know, spending $30,000 to go to Alaska last year and getting nothing.
Yeah.
And then having the opportunity to see it from my back door here and then sleeping through it, I'm kind of a bit annoyed with myself, you know?
Well, it's only building up. Next year's going to be even bigger. So it's the solar cycle's building and building. So it's only going to improve. So you're going to have plenty of other opportunities.
And Kath and I, you know, we were thinking of going to Europe next year, but we just got hit with a massive tax bill we weren't expecting. Like $40,000.
Got to earn it to pay taxes, though, dude. You must have been on a pretty penny.
$40,000 tax bill. Thank you very much.
Yeah. How many years has it been since you did a tax return?
12 months. It's a long and complicated story.
I'm sure it is. Is it worse than my nuts?
So, as a consequence, we're thinking we're probably not going to make it to Europe next year. So we're thinking of going to Tassie in September.
Yeah.
With the again the hope that, you know, we will luck out and strike one of these solar storms and actually have an opportunity to see the Southern Lights in all their glory. So, but again, like chasing any weather event, there are no guarantees. You know, so
of course, yeah. Speaking of, as Australians and yourself, from Friday night for the next week or so, Comet C3 or A3, whatever it's called, in the western sky just after sunset,
right?
Comet of the century.
Right.
If you've got a chance to get out and shoot it, get out and shoot it. You should not be disappointed, I wouldn't think.
Right.
It's not overly visible to the naked eye, but it will be excellent. And I've seen some amazing images. I've shot them already. Very big tail, very, very cool looking. So a bit late for, but it's going to be out there for a few weeks. So this podcast doesn't come out till the weekend, but get out there on a clear night if you've got it.
In between now and when this podcast comes out, this weekend is the Morissette show.
Morissette
is the nearest reasonable sized town to where we live.
Oh, so not Alanis Morissette.
No, not Alanis.
You want to know?
That's it. And it's their local show. And I haven't been to a rural show for, I reckon it'd be 25, 30 years since I've been to a show.
Isn't that ironic?
Right? It is. Boom, boom. So that's on Saturday. So Kath doesn't want to be down there all day. She's happy to go for the rodeo in the evening and the fireworks.
The rodeo.
Yeah, whatever. But I said to her, I said, well, look, can you drop me down there in the afternoon? I'd like to get down there about maybe 3 o'clock and see some of the events that are on through the day. And then I'll be more than happy to stay for the rodeo and the fireworks.
The rodeo.
Because some good photo opportunities there, you know, some opportunities to do some fast moving action stuff with the rodeo.
For sure.
And
with the donkeys.
Yep, that's it. And of course, then some fireworks stuff. So looking
forward. Well, you might get a chance to see the comet there too.
Possibly. So,
is there views of the west from there, do you think?
No, not from the showgrounds. There's a lot of trees to the western side of the showground. But from my home, I could probably see the comet if I got out there.
Well, you can see it. Go look tomorrow night because it's already there, but you only get to see a little bit of after sunset. It gets a little bit higher.
How
during
close
the week.
To the horizon is it?
At the moment, pretty reasonably close.
Right. I do have a mountain range to the west, which might obscure it, but
It might, yeah.
There's a spot I can think of that's not far from here that will get me a little bit of elevation, which might be enough, so.
Yeah, we'll definitely keep an eye on that. Yeah. You can take your camera and your tripod. Go with the big lens that makes it look bigger.
Yeah, okay. I was out this morning shooting another video backdrop for the ABC.
Really?
Yeah.
What did you shoot?
It was just one of the Newcastle Harbour from the eastern end of the harbour, but looking west down the harbour and back towards the city. I'd actually shot it a couple of weeks ago on a day not unlike today where it was overcast and raining, and I wasn't happy with what I got because I only got a couple of minute sequence before I ended up with rain splatter on the front element. And of course, you can't just wipe it off in the middle of the video.
It's like interviewing someone with all this.
So I went down again today. I thought I'll have another crack at it, even though it was a similar kind of day. And I just basically positioned, like once I got the camera in position and started shooting the video and the front element was clear of rain, I then basically stood over the top of the camera and tried to use my body to shield the front element from getting any rain splatter.
Well done that.
And I managed to
try to block the wind, do the same thing. Yeah.
And I managed to keep it rain-free for 20 minutes. So
nice.
That's enough for me to create a loop out of it and create another backdrop. So
nice.
Other than that, just business as usual. Went up to Darwin a couple of weeks ago.
You did.
So in New South Wales, we had a long weekend, the October long weekend. It's the same weekend as Bathurst.
My wife was delighted because she didn't have to deal with the morons in the Sydney office.
Yes.
She could go to work enough to deal with them. It's fabulous.
So we had the Monday off as the long weekend, and Kath and I both took the Tuesday off as well. So we flew up Friday night, got up into Darwin around midnight Friday night, and then caught the red eye out at midnight on the Monday and got back into Newcastle around about 10 o'clock Tuesday morning.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was good to see Max and his girlfriend, hang out with them for 3 days and yeah, just go out for dinner and just generally chill. So that was nice.
See the sights.
Yeah.
Not many sights to
see. There's not many sights to see.
I'll tell you what, though.
We did go to the Military Museum in Darwin at a place
that
called
would be interesting.
A suburb called East Point. And I will say this, I reckon it was more interesting than the War Memorial in Canberra.
Wow. Well, they have a lot more. I mean, Canberra never got bombed. Here's the thing. Here's a little stat about Darwin that not many people know. You probably do because you saw the museum.
Yeah.
Darwin had more bombs dropped on it than Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
So
and the bombings, the bombings against the Northern Territory by the Japanese in 42 and 43, it went on for about 18 months.
Yeah.
But the thing about the Military Museum at East Point in Darwin is they make it very clear, we have not tried to restore any of these artifacts. They are exactly as they were retrieved from the fields of battle. Yeah. So they're covered in rust and they look grungy and dirty, and there are no, you know, constructed dioramas like, you know, the War Memorial in Canberra. In contrast, having seen the Military Museum in Darwin, I now look at the War Memorial in Canberra and go, that's a really slick, contrived, maybe contrived is a bit too harsh.
Sanitized.
A very sanitized version of relics of war, and where the Darwin Military Museum feels very real. As the word I used to Kath when we walked out was, that felt so much more tangible than the War Memorial in Canberra. So I would say to anyone in Australia, if you do ever find yourself in Darwin, go and have a look at the Military Museum at East Point. I think it's...
Can I make one other recommendation if they're up there?
Sure.
And you should do it if you haven't done it yourself, is go to the Cyclone Museum.
No, I didn't realise there was a dedicated... museum.
I have to go reread my Bill Bryson book Down Under.
Oh, yeah.
Where he mentions going into it, and he reckons they have audio recordings, so you'd enjoy that being an audio guy, of Psycho Tracy, which destroyed the town in 1974 on Christmas Eve, for those who didn't know.
Yep.
Santa never made it into Darwin. A big wind came and blew it all away, as the song goes. But you go into this darkened room and just listen to the ferocity of the winds blowing, and the record is the most scary, horrendous, just simply terrifying sound, like demons coming at you. I'm not sure if it's still there. Maybe it's gone since Bruce.
We did go to the Darwin Museum the last trip we were up there, and maybe that was where because I do remember there being some Cyclone Tracy exhibits there. So I don't know if that's the one, or if there is an actual dedicated Cyclone Tracy Museum.
I'll have to if you enjoy travel and you enjoy reading and you haven't read Bill Bryson's books, I highly, highly recommend them. They are
Bill Bryson is great.
Have you ever seen the guy talk in real life?
No.
Most boring, bloody. Oh
really?
God, just shoot me, brother. He's just terrible.
Right.
He's just.
I remember listening to the audio book, A Brief History of Everything, which was fantastic. I absolutely loved
it. Amazing research. Yeah. I love it. I've read and reread his travel books like 50 times.
Right.
They are fabulous. But in real life, he's just very dull.
He's a very dull
individual. But the books are certainly certainly worth reading. So
yeah.
Since 2005, Shudders Inc. has been a labour of love. But beyond the time required to produce it, there is also a financial commitment. If you find value in the podcast and would like to help keep the servers running, hit up the Patreon link, which is in the show notes. Even a couple of dollars a month will help. Much appreciated. Now, back to the podcast.
Yeah, so what else have you got?
Well, the only one other thing that I came across, which I thought was kind of interesting, was Photoshop now has automatic distraction removal using AI.
Okay.
Basically, what you can do, you can hit find distractions and it analyzes your picture, and it says, well, I found these elements that I think might be distracting. It might be power lines or extraneous people to your shot, for example, or rubbish on the ground. Are you looking at the example?
Yeah, the one with the power lines,
Power lines, it's just that wires and cables gone. And it would probably does the same for dust spots and stuff like that as well.
Wow.
Gone.
That is phenomenal.
And it will give you a list of things. You can choose what to eliminate and what not to eliminate. And basically, so it eliminates and fills the rest in with AI and job done.
Wow.
If I was a amateur photographer, I'm not sure if I would. I have no problem with people use it. But maybe some of the joy of stuff is taken out. Even if you had to do that manually, you're still involved in the process. But as a commercial, if you're a commercial photographer and time is money, that's a great tool.
Yeah, totally.
So if you're a wedding photographer, having to cull 1,200 images or something, it's a good time saving tool. So I thought that was pretty cool. Anyway, that was
Wow.
My main bit of photo gear of interest this week.
So. Nice.
Oh, and I got to say, whilst on the talk of Bright, I did get to see whilst I was up at Bright, the new Tamron 90mm macro lens for Sony and Fuji mount. I've told you, Sony, Fuji, Nikon, definitely Sony. It used to be one of my favourite lenses of all time, the 90mm macro, and then they stopped making them altogether, and now they've just re-released it, and it looks a cracker, so... if anyone likes a good macro, and I use it for portraits, of course, it's a phenomenal lens for portraits.
Are you going to snaffle a copy to take to India with you?
I've already got three lenses I'm taking already, and it's just like, I just don't know if I could be asked.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, the 35-150 f2 to 2.8 that I'm taking is so damn sharp and so damn good.
Sorry, what lens? What length?
35-150.
Wow.
F2 to 2.8.
Nice. 150
I had a woman on the workshop. I'm pretty sure it was a Fuji lens she had, but I just can't remember. It was something like a 200-400 or 200. It was a biggish lens because I told people to bring the biggest lenses. But this thing was like f5.6 to f8. It's aperture range.
Okay.
F8. And it's like, I dialed it down to 200. So it must have been like 100 something. I dialed it down. I'm trying to get it down to some sort of, I thought, well, if I get it down to 200, it's got to be at least 5.6. It was still 6.7 at 200.
Oh.
It's like, ugh, that's just an unused. I wish I'd said 20 people. It's hard to find time to, but I'm almost guarantee it was a Fuji lens. I think, what the living hell, you know?
You'd want to be on a really new body that has good low light performance that you can, you know, crank up the ISO and get away with
just
it.
Just astounding, isn't it? Yeah. And don't even think about depth of field.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Just astounding. And I thought about it as well. When I was doing my flash tests with everyone who was coming to India, I put it on the Sony first. I was just going to demonstrate. I've been using it all the week before, no problem at all. Taking photos of the cat. So I put it out, fired the flash up, got the trigger on, press the camera button, no flash. Flash, shoot, no flash. It would not trigger the flash. So I put it onto Olympus body, put it on the Olympus, which is normally the biggest pane, fired it straight away. I put it on the Nikon body, fired it straight away. Then there was the lady there with a Panasonic, wouldn't fire. Yeah, I'm going, what the hell? So I got more research for me to do. And I got home and I turned to Sony, because I was testing shooting in the street.
Did you put it on silent shutter?
Yeah. Silent shutter doesn't trigger the flash. It's like, oh, God. So I'm hoping that's what was the problem with the Panasonic too.
Right.
Yeah, so she just can fire. But what a pain in the bum to remember to turn that back on every time.
I never, ever use that feature.
The silent shutter is fabulous for street shooting when you don't want people to know you're taking the photo.
Right.
Especially if you're doing portraits and you're waiting for that little bit of candy. You can be shooting them whilst talking to them.
Yeah.
And they're a lot more relaxed since you're not actually shooting.
Right.
But you are shooting.
Yeah.
So there's a great benefit to it.
Yeah.
And we gave a good test out of my new, yet to be actually tested in the real world, out on tour, shooting, walking around settings.
Right.
So it's fixed shutter speed, fixed aperture. Auto ISO
yep.
is my settings to give a test this time around and exposure compensation for dimmer switch, basically. So that seemed to work pretty well. So I'm pleased with that. And again, the easier I can make it for these guys to shoot and get reasonable shots, the easier it is for me. So I think that's a good foolproof method for people who aren't quite as, especially not up to speed with speed. Yeah, as in doing things fast when things are happening dynamically around.
Did you say you were taking the A7 IV or the A7 R4?
No, A7 IIIs.
Oh, A7 III, same as mine.
Yeah, same as yours,
awesome.
Well, I think I'm going to pick up my second body on Friday. I don't know whether it's a 3 or a 4 until I get there.
See, the thing I love about the 3, and I believe the 4 would be pretty much the same, is just how far you can push the ISO before noise becomes an issue. It is just beautiful. I remember in the last week I was seeing, you know, people posting stuff about the Auroras in, you know, different photography groups on Facebook.
Yeah.
And some guy going, oh, you know, had to really push the ISO to 3200. And I'm thinking, 3200? Like, what?
Oh, is that in broad daylight, mate?
Exactly. I don't have to worry about noise till I get to 10,000.
I like shooting at 4,000 and f32. That's my go-to ISO.
Yeah. So, the beauty of the new world, anyway.
There's a couple of reasons why I wanted to go to Sony for this trip is, A, to use the new series of lenses to provide stuff for Tamron.
Yep.
But for the eye control focus. And I've just realized I still haven't figured out how to actually make that absolutely guaranteed be working every time. I've got it turned on, but it doesn't seem to lock onto anyone's eye. So I've got to try and figure out what the trick is.
What I absolutely recommend is that you map the animal eye focus, human eye focus to one of the custom buttons, because that way, when you are out there and shooting, if you suddenly find yourself, you know, you're shooting the camels at the Pushkar Camel Fair, you can just switch to animal eye focus and it will pick up the eyes of animals without fail.
And hey, then, Bruce.
Yep.
What episode's this?
569.
That's the first great piece of advice you've given me in 500 or whatever episodes. That's a bloody ripper, mate. Well done. Awesome. That, my friend, is done. Yeah. I'm going to leave this bloody podcast and I'm going to go do that straight away. Well done. Good suggestion, mate.
Yeah. Now, you've got four custom buttons on the body that you can map any feature to.
Yeah.
And I have that particular feature mapped for exactly that reason.
So you have animal on one and human on the other.
Well, it's the same custom button. You just use it as a toggle. So you basically just push that custom button and you're toggling between human eye focus or animal eye focus. And it's just, yeah.
But the problem is when it's on human eye focus, it's not picking up the friggin' eyes.
The only reason it won't is if you are shooting in really low light and it's having trouble determining.
Broad daylight.
Up close and personal. Weird. That is weird.
And even when I manage to start to get it to lock onto the eyes or to register the little green box around the eyes, if I moved, it moved off as well.
Are you friends with Mark Gaylor?
A little tiny bit, yeah.
Reach out to him because he shoots Sony every single day. He would know exactly what's going on, and he's in your neck of the woods.
Is he?
Yeah, he's in
Victoria, you mean?
Yeah. Like the only reason I've ever found the eye autofocus to not work is because you're in low light.
Yeah, that makes sense, and I wouldn't expect that to be particularly effective. But in broad daylight, with almost nothing but face in the shot.
Yeah, that's very odd. There's something weird going on there.
I guarantee it's user error.
Maybe. But definitely map that human or animal to one of your custom buttons, because that's the last thing. It's the kind of thing you don't change very often, so it's the kind of thing that if you had to go into the menus to find it, you'd spend half an hour looking for it. Yeah. So if you've got it mapped to a custom button, you can just switch.
Well, I mean, at Pushcar, they do have the prettiest camel competition. So, yeah, you want to be making sure you're nailing those eyes, you know? You think I'm joking?
I had a snide remark and I held myself back.
I guarantee they have the prettiest. They decorate the camels. They have the prettiest camel competition. I remember a few jokes about the French Foreign Legion about that too. Why are you running? Good, need to get the good-looking ones. That sort of stuff. Oh dear. No, I'll definitely do that. That's a good tip, mate. Thank you.
No problem.
And that's it. That's all I got. That's all we got. That's awesome. All there is.
Mate, well, good to chat again. So when are you off? When do you actually leave?
Well, here's the thing. So my wife's away for all this week.
Yep.
Then she's back for the week, and then she's away all next week. Mm. And then she's back, then I'm off that following week. So my time between now and going to India is pretty much shot.
All right. So this is probably our last chat till won't I get have back. A chat until you get back.
Yeah.
And you're going for 3 weeks?
Yeah, I'll be back after 16th of November. Right. So,
well, mate, you have a good trip in India.
Thanks, dude.
Try and take some good photos.
I'm more interested in getting some good stories, so I hope you've got some good stories. Hopefully none of them are testicle related.
Absolutely. We can
hope. Yeah, it's going to be fabulous. I'm looking forward to it. And certainly hope we get some cracking shots and I've got a couple of little surprises for the tour group. We're doing some things that they don't know about, which is kind of good.
Nice.
Some good photo opportunities they have no clue about, which will be kind of cool. So
beautiful.
I'm hoping they'll either won't be a complete disaster or they'll be fabulous.
Awesome.
One of the two.
Awesome. All right, mate. Well, have fun.
Thank you. Take care, everybody.
We'll talk to you late November.
Indeed.
See you, mate.
Bye.
You've been listening to Shutters Inc. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.